Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Bhai Bhava ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanandi. Okay. So what we discussed in the previous class? Begin a new section about the history of Chitraketu Maharaj. So we did verses 1 to 13. Hearing how Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami how it is that Vritrasura, who is a demon, could have so many devotional qualities. And this has led into the discussion of the pastime of Chitraketu, who Vritrasura was in his previous life. So in this chapter we'll hear about Chitraketu and how he came in due course of time to become Vritrasura. So last week we went from verses 1 to 13, tonight we'll go from verses 14 to 31. Okay, as we continue through this chapter. Any points? Anyone called Brinda who is sitting down? Going to sit down? Why don't you go and sit on that side of the table? If you sit there, you're going to be too much of a monkey. That's good. Good girl. Any points? Good girl. So we begin with verse number 14. Once upon a time, when the powerful sage named Angira was traveling all over the universe without engagement, by his sweet will he came to the palace of King Chitraketu. Chitraketu immediately stood up from his throne and offered him worship. He offered drinking water and eatables, and in this way performed his duty as a host to a great guest. When the Rishi was seated very comfortably, the king, restraining his mind and senses, sat on the ground at the side of the Rishi's feet. So what we're seeing in this section is many instructions on Vedic culture. Srila Prabhupada has said that Krishna consciousness will take place on the earth through a cultural conquest. In other words, we will be teaching people about an ancient culture which is superior to their modern so-called culture. And by the presentation of this culture, people will become attracted to our movement. So Prabhupada actually said in England, because England is a little refined in terms of people's behavior. Just like, I'm just generalizing, but you meet people from America and they're a little bit more base in their quality. When you meet people from England, I'm generalizing, not all people, but English people, they're a little bit more refined, a little bit more cultured like that. So Prabhupada actually said in England, England's Krishna consciousness will spread by cultural conquest, a cultural presentation. In other words, presenting the culture of Krishna consciousness, then people will become attracted. So Prabhupada wanted dramas to take place, and they have, in England, they have the Bhaktivedanta Players, which is a semi-professional drama group which travels around and presents dramas on Krishna consciousness. Also by art, all the different types of arts, by music, by cuisine, these things, we will conquer people. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said in the beginning, he said that if any children make noise, they will have to go and sit outside. Who, hands up if you want to sit outside. Hands up if you're going to be very quiet. Very good. So, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that in the very beginning of the movement, in 1965-1966, when he first brought Krishna consciousness to the West, Prabhupada said they were not coming for my class. They were not coming for the kirtan. They were coming for prasadam. So this is how Prabhupada began the movement. He said, in the very beginning, people are coming for prasadam. Even we see, if you see the Sunday feast here at the temple, right? Class, kirtan, you might have 50 to 100 people. By the time you serve the feast, you'll have 500 people. Right? Which I'm not necessarily saying is a good thing. I don't necessarily agree with the way it's done and organized necessarily. But the fact is that people are attracted to the culture of prasad, the exotic cuisine, which attracts people like that. So it's a cultural conquest. So through culture, people will become attracted to Krishna. So we're seeing here in this section, we'll see many features of Vedic culture. So how do we see Vedic culture in this these opening verses? We see the way that a guest should be received. What is the Sanskrit for receiving a guest in terms of the Vedic civilization?
Atithi.
Yeah, atithi. Atithi means?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, titi. Titi means time. Like that. Atithi means untimely. It means in the Vedic culture, if someone just knocks on your door or comes to your home, then you will receive them immediately. But that is the culture. Untimely. Not just that when someone comes around because you've invited them, but even when someone comes uninvited, how you receive them. The Vedic culture is that you should receive them like Bhagawan. You should receive them like God himself. As God has come to your home, you should treat the guest like that. Prabhupada says that even if you are poor, or you are unprepared, or you do not have sufficient facility, Prabhupada said you can greet the person or receive the person just with kind words, a sitting place, and some water. At least you can offer that. Everyone can offer that. You know, you can offer some kind words, you know, a nice place to sit, or even a simple place. Prabhupada said even a straw mat and some water. This is the minimal standard which we can offer to a guest. But in the Vedic culture, you will offer the guest as much as you can, as much facility as possible. So when the guest arrives, then they should be received properly. And this actually creates great auspiciousness in society and great auspiciousness in the home. For your home, your griha, to become auspicious, much of it is based on how you receive the guests that come to your home. The way you receive them, then it becomes very auspicious, becomes very... all good fortune will come to you if you treat the guests properly. So we see here that Chitraketu, he is giving all facility to Angira, who is one of the great sages in the universe. And because he is receiving him so nicely, he will be blessed by the sage. Automatically, when you receive someone very properly, you invoke their blessings. They become inclined to bless you. So because he has received the sage very nicely, now the sage is inclined to give special blessings to Chitraketu, which will actually liberate him. So any points? Any other points? No. We'll continue. O King Parikshit, when Chitraketu, bent low in humility, was seated at the lotus feet of the great sage, the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality. The sage addressed him in the following words. The great sage, Angira, said, My dear king, I hope that your body and mind and your royal associates and paraphernalia are well. When the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, the ego, and the five objects of sense gratification are in proper order, the living entity within the material elements is happy. Without those seven elements, one cannot exist. Similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements: his instructor, swami or guru, his ministers, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, his royal order and his friends.
As it is quoted by Shiva Swami, it is probably Swami Amatya Janapadi, Duruda Dravina Shanchaya, Dando Mitram Ashayata, Sattva Prakat Tayo Mata. The king is not alone. He first is the spiritual master, the Supreme Master. Then come his ministers, his kingdom, his fortifications, his strategy, his system of law and order, and his friends or allies. If this seven are properly maintained, the king is happy. Similarly, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, Dehinoskin Jahadeva, the living entity, the soul is within the material. Within the material covering of the Mahatattva, you go in Panchatan Matra, the five objects of sense gratification. When these seven are in proper order, the living entity is in a mood of pleasure. Generally, when the associates of the king are quiet and familiar, the king can be happy. Therefore, the great sage Angira Rishi inquired about the king's personal health and the good fortune of his seven associates. When we inquire from a friend whether everything is well, we are concerned not only with his personal self, but also with his family, his source of income, and his assistants or servants. All of them must be well. And then a person will be well.
What are the points in this purport?
Just not asking, it's also extended to our family members and well wishes and friends. If everybody is happy, then we automatically become.
Any other points? So in order for proper administration to take place, these seven items need to be present. So this is, we're seeing once again, these are Vedic cultural points. That's what Prabhupada mentions in the very beginning, the Bhagavatam, in the introduction, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a cultural presentation meant for the re-spiritualization of a misdirected civilization. So we're seeing here what is necessary for a government to run properly. How things, to be administrated properly, you need these different elements. So we see, if you look at this temple as an example, as a microcosmic government like that, then you'll see that these elements are present, and that's why this temple is successful. What is the first item? Press up. Very good. That's a different cantor. What is the first item? No, according to this list.
The spiritual master.
Yeah, the guru, the Swami. So this is the central pivot of the success of the institution. So why is this kind of successful? Because the guru is at the center. Not that we accept this Rithvic philosophy, that there's one guru at the center, but actually the founder Acharya has stated that his disciples will also become gurus in their own right. But still it means the founder Acharya is at the center. Why is this kind of so powerful, more powerful than the other Gaudiya institutions? Because Prabhupada is at the center. And even in this temple you see that Prabhupada is at the center. He sits on the Vyasa-san. This is actually very unique because you won't go to any other institution where the guru or the founder of Acharya is given as much prominence as Prabhupada. Every temple, and Prabhupada has put a murti of himself. This is Prabhupada's instruction. He said, when I pass away, he said, you create a murti and you place it there. And every day you do guru puja to the murti. That's Prabhupada's instruction. It's very powerful. You won't see that in other places. You won't even see other gurus in the tradition have done that. They've instructed that a murti be made for them in every one of their temples and be worshipped on a daily basis. You won't see that the murti is worshipped in front of the deities. That's also exceptional. Because normally the devotee will not accept worship in front of the deities. The Prabhupada accepts worship in front of the deities every day. And that was his instruction. It's very interesting that Prabhupada does like that. Such an intimate associate of Krishna, who was predicted by Mahaprabhu himself in Chaitanya Mangala, more Senapati Bhakta, my great devotee, my general, my commander in chief, will come. And he will lead the army on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada understood his position even within our sampradaya. Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Yuga avatar, Srila Prabhupada is the Yuga Acharya. He said, my books will be the law books for the next 10,000 years. So when the guru is at the center, the institution becomes very powerful. And you see in this temple, the guru is worshipped and the gurus are worshipped very nicely. And this temple is very successful. Now, what is the second item?
Ministers.
Right? So it means the temple president has to have good ministers. In other words, the temple president has to have good advisors around him. And I've seen over time places where the temples are doing well, it takes a team of people. They can't just take one person to make everything successful. It takes a team. And I see here in Melbourne there are so many integral members in our administration and leading in our temple community. There are so many integral people that the temple is becoming very successful. It takes many people. Prabhupada actually said that to the GBC at one point. He said, no one of you. He said, all of you together. He said, not one of you alone. Prabhupada did not make the system that there would be one acharya. In many institutions, there was one acharya like that. But Prabhupada specifically said, in ISKCON, there will not be like that. Although he did say that a self-effulgent personality may come in the future. He said that. He said, someone may come. And he's just so prominent that everyone says, you lead, we'll follow you. But we don't see that as happening up until now. But still, we see that Prabhupada, he has made that system, that there must be an administration, an administrative body. And when the temple president is supported by many talented people around him, you see the temple community is flourishing. And you see in this temple it is flourishing very nicely. And what is the next item? His kingdom. Kingdom also means the citizens. It means if the devotees are good, then the temple president's life is made easy. If the devotees are very, very peaceful, very well behaved, and very obedient, then the temple president's life also becomes very stress-free. Okay. Then what is next?
He's fought.
My Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, said, when he came here in the 90s, he said, one of the reasons why this temple is one of the most successful temples in ISKCON is because of this building we're in right now. Because Prabhupada House is such a stable object, such a stable building, a fortress. It's a very prominent building. This is the oldest building in South Melbourne. If you go from here to the South Melbourne Town Hall, this was the first building to be built between here and the South Melbourne Town Hall 150 years ago. And this is the first Lord Mayor of South Melbourne built this building that we're in now, Prabhupada's house. And it was there, and it was actually built on sand dunes. We're actually situated on sand dunes here. And there was only the beach, and there was nothing going for about 2 or 3 kilometres back that way. This was the first house. And that very stable structure. And you see he brought in Italian architects people from Italy to do all this cornicing and all this base relief and all these things. Spent a lot of money to design this building. And actually, when it was built, everyone was laughing. They said it's going to collapse because he's building it on the sand dunes. Because the sand is compacted, and it's very stable. And it's one of the reasons why ISKCON Melbourne is so stable, because this building is so stable. Like that. And Prabhupada himself personally stayed in this building on several occasions. Yeah. What is the next? The
treasury.
The treasury. Yeah. So this is Mathura Manaha Prabhu's department. The treasury. Like that. So if you don't have money, Prabhupada said money is the blood of ISKCON. He said Sankirtan is the heartbeat. What keeps ISKCON going is Sankirtan, is congregational chanting for the whole. Just like yesterday, the devotees had a 12-hour kirtan. Constantly, more and more chanting is taking place. This is the heartbeat of ISKCON. When the chanting of the holy name is going on, ISKCON goes very strongly. But still, Prabhupada said, money is the blood. If you don't have any money, even if you're chanting, it's not going to go. The movement's not going to succeed or progress. So we need a great deal of funds. It is necessary for ISKCON to be successful. Now I've seen, because I've been in this temple for over 20 years, that in the past we didn't have so much money. And the temple was limited. Now we have much more money. And you can see the more money we get, the more the temple flourishes, the more we can spread the movement. But the amount of money we have is not sufficient. We should all make endeavours to increase the cash flow or the income of the temple. Because Prabhupada said, the more money comes... Actually, Prabhupada said, if we earn $1 million today, in the morning, he said, by the end of the day, we will spend the whole thing. That was Prabhupada's mood. If he got $1 million, he would spend it all, and then tomorrow, another million will come, and he'll spend all of that. So much to do in Krishna's service. So it is our responsibility to make the cash flow of the temple increase. Then next.
Royal order.
So this means the potency of the leader. So we're fortunate here, we have a strong temple president. Everyone has defects in this material world. Every individual has defects. And even our leaders, sometimes everyone has some defects. But the fact is that Anuruddha Prabhu has been very stable and very strong for over 20 years. And that's part of the great success of this institution, this temple, is that he's been very strong and he's a strong leader. And he is not scared to make strong judgments and to be forceful on occasion. And actually that is necessary for leadership to be successful. If a leader is strong and not scared to be strong when it is necessary to discipline, then the institution will become very powerful. So this is a credit. When the leader is strong, then you'll see there'll be stability and there'll be strength in the continuity of the institution. And then?
Friends.
Yeah. So it means there has to be camaraderie. And when you see there's camaraderie amongst the devotees, then there's success. Prabhupada actually said, nothing can stop our movement from outside. It can only be stopped from inside. When the devotees internally quarrel. I've been listening to Harisori Prabhu's pastimes, his discussions on Prabhupada's pastimes. Very enlivening, illuminating, very accurate, actually. Now, I feel very inspired by Harisori Prabhu's presentations. I find them to be the most clarifying. Of all the people I hear speak about Prabhupada's pastimes, he's so minute in the details and so accurate to what actually happened and what Prabhupada actually said and what historically took place. So I was listening 1975, 1976. There was a great deal of conflict within ISKCON. My Guru Maharaj was leading an entire kind of movement within our movement. And as a sannyasi with many brahmacharis and other sannyasis, they had a book distribution party which was driving around America, which was making Prabhupada extremely happy because they were distributing something like 50% of the books in the movement at the time. Prabhupada was very pleased, but they were very, very strong, and you could even say a little fanatical. And they would go into temples and they would say to the brahmacharis in the temples that the grihastha temple presidents are in Maya because they're grihasthas. You should just come with us and travel and preach. And they wouldn't even get permission from the local authority, and they would just drive in, take the brahmacharis and drive out. So naturally this was upsetting the temple presidents and the temples. So it got to 1976, Gaupanin, and this was all presented to Prabhupada. And it was very interesting the way Prabhupada dealt with it. Right? He didn't actually Prabhupada did not come out and say this is wrong or this is right. He just heard both sides, and he let it be debated and he let it be discussed. And he said, in due course of time, the right answer will come out like that. And then finally, the GBC, they came together and they had their meeting in 1976, and Tamal Krishnamaraj became the chairman of the GBC. And they made these resolutions that grihasthas could not be temple presidents within ISKCON. That they made resolutions, passed them, and then they did the whole thing. And then finally, the resolutions came to Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada called them in and called the grihasthas in, because the grihasthas were very upset, because the GBC just decided that they could not be temple presidents anymore. They had to go and get jobs. And then finally, they all came into Prabhupada's room, and then Prabhupada finally set the whole thing straight. And he said, actually, everyone in this movement is preaching. So he said, actually, whether you're a grihastha or a sannyasi or a brahmachari, if you're preaching, actually everyone is a sannyasi. Because sannyas means mind, body and words used in the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada says, regardless of the situation, externally, if you're preaching Krishna consciousness, you're on the platform of sannyas. So Prabhupada did not reject the grihasthas. But the grihasthas have to be dedicated to preaching the mission of Krishna consciousness. Okay. So when there is internal conflict, it causes so many problems. And you see that Prabhupada, he did not like this internal conflict. And he would bring the devotees together when there was this internal conflict, and he said, let's discuss it, to try to rectify the situation. But still, internal conflict sometimes it happens, but it has to be resolved because, as Prabhupada said, nothing can stop our movement externally, it is only internally. So if we're all friends, our institution becomes very strong. So there has to be strong camaraderie amongst the devotees. Is that the seven of them? Is there any more? That's it. So all of these need to be there for there to be good government. And you see this temple, I've been meditating on this today when I was studying it. This temple's success is based on these seven principles. That's why it is such a strong institution, such a strong temple. Because all seven of these elements are there. Right there. Any points? O King, O Lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy. May I join quickly?
The actual happiness of a king and his dependents is described in his words. A king should not simply give orders to his dependents because he is supreme. Sometimes he must follow their instructions. Similarly, the dependents should depend on the king. This mutual dependence will make everyone happy.
Any points here? Veda means knowledge. So Prabhupada points this out in Ishopanishad. If something is true in this world, it must be in the Vedas. So if that's a successful managerial trait, then it must be Vedic. And we see that it is Vedic because it's in the Bhagavad Gita. Any other points? So this is a discussion or an elaboration or an illumination on Vedic leadership. So we should take note of how to become successful in leadership. These qualities are there. The Bhagavatam is teaching us how to be a successful leader. So one of the first qualities is the leader is one who learns to take good counsel and recognizes the good advice of others. An unsuccessful leader is one who does not listen to others. The definition of a leader is that the leader must know where he is going, and he must have people following him. If you don't know where you're going, and no one is following you, you're not a leader, by definition. To say, we're walking through the forest, hey you kids, who is going to be a little bit quiet now? Too much noise. So if we're walking through the forest, whoever's in front, they have to know where they're going. Otherwise they're not the leader. And someone has to be following them, otherwise they're not leading. So that is the definition of a leader. You must know where you're going, and there must be people following you. That is the definition. Now, just because you're the leader does not mean that you do not listen to anyone. And that is the defect we see in many leaders in the modern world and also in the past. Just like, who's an example in the Bhagavatam of someone who does not listen to anyone?
Vena,
very good example. Right? Would not listen to anyone. Daksha, yeah, you could say Daksha. Like that. Vena is probably the standout personality. He would not listen to anyone. No? Therefore, he was removed. He became unsuccessful as a leader. Duryodhan, many people, they do not listen. So a leader who does not listen to others, then he cannot be successful. So even if we are the leader, constantly we must counsel others. Constantly we must receive counsel from others. We're always asking for advice. Even Prabhupada, you listen to these pastimes when different devotees speak about Prabhupada, he was always asking for counsel. Now, just like I was listening, I think today, Prabhupada was in Mumbai and his health was failing. So he called his leaders together. There was about seven different very exalted personalities in ISKCON were there. And Prabhupada said, what do you think I should do? Should I go to Vrindavan or should I stay here in Mumbai? And six of them said, you should go to Vrindavan. And then Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he was the GBC, he said, Prabhupada, you should stay here in Mumbai. Because if you leave Mumbai, because we're building this temple, the Juhu Temple, if you leave, the construction will slow down. It's only because you're up here, everything's going ahead so nicely. But the other six said, no, Prabhupada, you should go to Vrindavan because your health is failing now. So you should just go to Vrindavan and absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, he left. He went to Vrindavan. Because the consensus was, Prabhupada would always take counsel from all the devotees. Often he would do this. He would call everyone together and say, what do you think? What should we do? What do you think about this? And he would listen to everyone like that. So this is the situation of a good leader. A proper leader is always consulting everyone, taking counsel from everyone. Then, it is said, Prabhupada says that management means delegation. If you're actually a good manager, you will delegate. Just like there was this story of Henry Ford, who was the founder of Ford Motor Company, very successful business magnate. So he walked into the office of one of his principal managers. And this manager, he had four phones on the desk. Right, and he was answering all the phones practically simultaneously, and he was working so hard, and there was papers all over the desk, and there's so much going on. Henry Ford walked in and he observed him for a few minutes. He was doing so much, and when he put the phones down, Henry Ford called him over, and he said, "You're fired." He said, "I don't think you're in the right position, and I don't think you're the best thing for this company." He went into the next office, right, and the manager was sitting there. Right, he had four phones on the desk. None of the phones were going. No papers on the desk. He was just sitting there very quietly, practically not doing anything. And Henry Ford walked in there and he looked at him, observed him, and he said, "I'm going to give you a raise." Why? Because this manager was delegating. And Prabhupada said, management means delegation. This is leadership. Not that you do everything yourself. You see Prabhupada, right, constantly delegating. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. He said to Giriraj Maharaj, who was arranging the Bombay Pandal program, a huge Pandal program, Prabhupada said, a manager has to learn to be lazy intelligent. Lazy means you don't do anything yourself, but you're intelligent, you get everyone else to do it. Actually, that's the best manager. Right? He will simply delegate. He'll say, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. That is good management. Right? So this is the Vedic style of management, actually. The king simply delegates to his ministers. Even the story is there of, I think it's Janak Maharaj. He's one great king. So he was listening to the Bhagavatam, and then one of the ministers ran in and said, the treasury is on fire. And he just said, okay, just do this, do this, do this. Okay, go. Like that. And then delegated, he went off and took care of the treasury, and he just sat there and kept listening to the Bhagavatam. So this is the system of Vedic management. And then finally, the point is made that one who is actually powerful, he remains unaffected by opulence. A good leader does not become affected by opulence, because the kings were very opulent. But they never thought that the opulence belonged to them. If you read about the opulence of Maharaj Yudhishthira and the other kings, they were incredibly opulent. King means opulence. He has to have opulence because it's a symbol of his power. But he does not become influenced by the opulence. Because he sees that simply he's using this on behalf of the citizens. Simply he's using this wealth on behalf of Krishna. Simply he's using the wealth on behalf of the kingdom. So although he's surrounded by opulence, he does not become affected by it. So you see, the great kings, they don't become overwhelmed by greed. Even though they're surrounded by so much opulence, but they're always using it for the benefit of others. So that is also the test of the leader. So much opulence is at his disposal, but he must use it for the benefit of the others. Prabhupada actually said, not a farthing should be wasted in Krishna's service. Not a penny. And if you listen to the early accounts, 1966, when Prabhupada was in New York, ISKCON only had like 10 or 15 members. Prabhupada was keeping accounts. ISKCON accounts. Right? And if you read the entries, Prabhupada said, bus fare, $1.63. Right? Every cent was being recorded. ISKCON probably only had about $10 or $15 at the time. That was ISKCON's total sum wealth. But Prabhupada was recording everything very perfectly. And as a result, then ISKCON became very opulent. Because the wealth was not being misused. So, any points?
I heard even in material life, successful people follow this leadership principle of taking counsel from them. And hearing a material example, I was hearing Sachin say that Sachin Tendulkar is such a famous batsman that he's done so well in his career. But
who is that?
Sachin Tendulkar, but when he used to go to schools, like some school has invited him, and he used to bat and he used to take feedback from the students using my Stanford College or something. He was always open to feedback. Like, there were some students who were serious about cricket and he used to take feedback from them also.
Hmm. That's
good.
Which verse we up to?
19.
O King, are your wives, citizens, secretaries, and servants, and the merchants who sell spices and oil under your control? Are you also in full control of ministers, the inhabitants of your palace, your provincial governors, your sons, and your other dependents?
The master or king and his subordinates should be interdependent. Through cooperation, both of them can be happy.
Any points? So, in order for a leader to be peaceful, there needs to be submission from those who are subordinate. There's one famous management book that came out a number of years ago, and there was a principle in the book, and the principle is lead, follow, or get out of the way. So that is leadership. Either you're leading or you're following, or you're not doing either. So someone who is a good leader, they have to know how to be both, but just simultaneously. I remember His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was speaking about His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj after Tamal Krishna Maharaj disappeared from this world, and he was admiring Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was saying that he understood this quality very nicely. The quality that to adjust, sometimes you have to learn to adjust from being the servant to the leader momentarily or within one moment. So he said that Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was cooking for Bhavananda Prabhu and Tamal Krishna Maharaj while they were serving Prabhupada in 1977, because they were personally serving Srila Prabhupada. So then he was cooking for them. So they would come out, and they would come out just at any time, because it was very rigorous being with Prabhupada in those final days. So they would come out, and then they would sit down and they would take prasad, and Bhaktivedanta Maharaj would serve them. He was a brahmachari at the time, and they were sannyasis. Yeah. So one time Bhavananda Prabhu was sitting there taking prasad, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj came, because he was serving Prabhupada, so he came out and he sat down, and then he said, okay, so then Bhaktivedanta Maharaj started serving, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was looking at Bhavananda Prabhu and he was eating some curd sabji, and then Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was putting the sak on the plate, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj just looked, he said, no, I said, I want what he's got, I want that. Like that. And then Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, then he said, no, if you eat the sak first, you will get the proper taste, because there is an order in which the preparations must be served and honored. Then you will get the proper taste. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj looked at Bhavananda Prabhu and he said, who's this guy? Like, who's this guy? You know, he's just a servant. He's telling me how to eat and all these things. And Bhavananda Prabhu said, no, actually, he's right. He understands Bengali cuisine and cooking and serving and culture. So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj became very submissive, even though he was the leader one moment, but immediately, as soon as he understood he didn't know something, then immediately he became submissive. He said, oh, now tell me what to do. He said, what shall I eat first? So then Maharaj began to serve him according to the proper order. Yeah. So then we have to learn momentarily how to go from leader to servant and servant to leader. From the person who is the instructed to that person who's being instructed. So this actually requires some humility. But a good leader must be like that. And you see, Srila Prabhupada was like that. Even though he was the leader of the movement, sometimes a devotee would tell Prabhupada something Prabhupada did know, and Prabhupada would go, oh, and then he would immediately begin to follow. Even though, as one example, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was saying that all the devotees were in the airport and Prabhupada was sitting, and they were waiting for Prabhupada to get on the plane, so all the devotees were sitting on the ground around Prabhupada. You see the old footage of ISKCON, when Prabhupada would arrive at the airports, and devotees would take over the airport. So there was many devotees, I think about 50 devotees, Prabhupada was sitting everywhere. So all the other passengers couldn't come and sit, because they were taking up all the room. So then one of the airport officials came to one of the devotees and said, can you please ask them to move so people can sit down? So this devotee stood up on one of the seats and he said, okay, he said, all the devotees, please vacate this area. Right? And only one devotee stood up out of all the devotees. Right? And that was Prabhupada. And when he heard the announcement, all the devotees vacate this area, he stood up, ready to vacate the area. All the other devotees just sat there because they thought, oh, they're just kamis. We're the devotees, we don't need to move, like that. But Prabhupada, he immediately went into the submissive role. Because he does not have false ego. So devotees have to learn this position. Leaders have to learn this position. So, any points?
Somebody hearing the example which you are mentioning about Prabhupada. After that, some devotees went and asked Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada said, when that person said all the devotees, move to the right side somewhere. Some devotee went and asked Prabhupada, how come Prabhupada is left and you went? I'm not a devotee, I'm trying to become a devotee.
Another point which is there, which we've made in previous classes, is that in relationships between leaders and followers, or in any relationship, wife and husband, or friend and friend, or any relationship, if there is friction within the relationship, it means that one of the people in the relationship is not following the proper etiquette of that relationship. You'll see, amongst the children and the parents, or amongst the teacher in the Bhakti Vaibhav class and the kids, you know, it doesn't matter what the relationship is. If there's friction in the relationship, that means that one of the people is not following the etiquette. In other words, the subordinate is trying to be superior instead of being subordinate. Or the wife is not being submissive to the husband like she's supposed to be eternally. Not having the proper mood like that. Or between two friends, if there's friction, that means they're not following the rule of friendship properly. They're not understanding how to deal with each other properly. Or between the children and the parents, or between anyone, it means we're not following the etiquette. So a leader means that you have to understand how to be the leader and how to be the follower simultaneously. It means that, you see, Prabhupada as an example. Prabhupada was a guru, but what was the qualification for him being a guru? He was a perfect disciple. So you can only be a leader or an authority when you yourself are a proper student. Right? And if you're a proper student, then you will get the ability to be an authority. Otherwise, you cannot be an authority. You cannot be an authority unless you're a proper student yourself. Unless you are submissive, how can you expect others to follow your instructions yourself? Any points? If the king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. His provincial governors present taxes on time without resistance. I want to speak of lesser servants. Radha Balabha?
Sangeeta Rishi asked the king whether his mind was also under control. This is the most essential for happiness.
What are the points? Yeah, because people respect other people, or especially leaders who have self-control. Right? Just like these days, there is a crisis in modern leadership. In other words, none of us have faith in politicians anymore. Right? And that's actually a crisis. Because we don't have faith. Just like, what's our choice in Australia? You know, I think, are we having an election soon? In Australia? Is there an election coming up?
Next year.
Is it next year, is it? I thought it was this year. I saw some posters around. I thought maybe it's coming. So, and America is coming up this year, right? But look at the people that we're choosing between, right? They don't have self-control on so many levels. So therefore, you cannot trust someone who does not have mind control or sense control. Right? If someone is not in control of their self, of their mind, of their senses, you cannot trust them. You can only have proper faith in that person. So the leader must have self-control, must have mind control. And if the person has that, then automatically you trust that person. Now Prabhupada points out, I've been listening to these lectures by Arisori Prabhu, Prabhupada points out that everyone in Kali Yuga has defects. Prabhupada said, even I have defects. Not that we see Prabhupada like that, but Prabhupada was saying like that. Everyone has defects. So we have to be lenient on other devotees. You have to be lenient on other devotees, but strict on yourself. Right? At least you should be a good example. But if other devotees, if they have some fault, you can't say, oh, look, he's not mind control, he's not self-controlled. Just like I personally have certain weaknesses, many weaknesses. What's one of my weaknesses? Yeah, see, he knows me. Yeah, Sri Kant, see, you all know me, like that. Even like Tamokrish Maharaj's feast was there, and we were serving out the gulab jamuns, right? So I was walking back along the line, and I walked past one plate. You know, they leave the plates for the devotees who were serving out. I walked past one plate, and there was gulab jamuns. I just picked one up. Someone else's prasad. I had no right to touch that. But I had no self-control. No control, so I put it in my mouth. Right? And then one of the devotees came up to me and said, I'm never coming to your Bhakti Bhai Bhav class again. You have no self-control. What sort of a teacher are you? What sort of an example are you to the devotional community? No, they didn't really say that. But we have to be lenient with devotees. Because devotees have defects. But on ourselves, we should be very strict. We should practice mental control. We should practice self-control as much as we can. Because then people will have faith in you. Right? If you have control of your mind, control of your senses, people will have faith in you. Right? And then that is what it takes to be a leader. You have to be able to trust the leaders. And that is a crisis in modern society. The people you work for, do you trust them? Hands up if you really, really trust the people that you work for. No one's put their hand up. That's a crisis. That's a crisis. We're in a world where we don't even trust the people who we're dealing with every day. The only people we trust are the people in this room, you know, the people in our own institution, and people outside also. Well, I trust my mother. Right? She's not like a full devotee, but she's, you know, I trust her very deeply. Right? So there's certain people in this world I trust, but most of the people I trust are actually devotees. And that's a crisis. That the world has become like that. A leader has to be someone you can trust, which means they must have control of the senses, they must have control of the mind. Any points? I couldn't hear you, sorry.
You think prasadam is also self-control?
Eating prasadam is also self-control. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I justify my actions. Otherwise I have none. Any other points? Okay. O King Chitraketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased. You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself, or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety. So the face is the index of the mind. So if someone is happy, you just look at their face. If someone is unhappy, you just look at their face. If you look at their face, you will see what is the person, what is going on in the mind. You just look at the face and you can see what is going on in the mind. Like sometimes you look at someone's face and you think, oh, yeah. Better I don't say anything to them today. Better I go the other way. Just by looking at them, you can see. Just by looking at the person, you can see what's going on in the mind. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Parikshit, although the great sage Angira knew everything, he inquired from the king in this way. Thus King Chitraketu, desiring a son, bent low in great humility and spoke to the great sage as follows. King Chitraketu said, O great Lord Angira, because of austerity, knowledge, and transcendental samadhi, you are freed from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding embodied, conditioned souls like us. O great soul, you are aware of everything, yet you are asking me why I am full of anxiety. Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by the external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulence, or possessions. which are desirable even for great demigods, because I have no son. Any points? Just like there is one saying, Russell, what was that saying you said a couple of years ago? There is no pain-like attachment, and there is no pleasure-like detachment.
There is no misery-like attachment, there is no happiness-like attachment.
Where does that come from?
Chanakya
said that. Okay. So there is no happiness-like detachment, and there's no misery-like attachment. That is the material world. All right? When you become attached to something, you become miserable. As soon as you're attached in this world, it's a source of misery. And when you become detached from the same thing, that's when you can actually become happy. But the materialists, they think it's the opposite way. They think if I become more attached to this thing, I'll become more happy. And if I become detached, I'll become unhappy. But actually, it's the opposite. And a devotee sees it the opposite way. When we become detached from this material world, then we can actually taste happiness. But if we're attached in this world, then it ultimately leads to misery. That is the nature of this material world. So, Chanakya has also said, a different saying, that the family life without children is a desert. If you are in grihastha life and there are no children, it is like a desert. Right? Because then it just becomes completely like sterile, like it is like in a desert. When you're in the desert, it's completely devoid of pleasure. And you see grihastha life, when there is no children, it becomes like that. It becomes devoid of pleasure. Like that. So this is the nature of the material world. Then if you're in grihastha life, you should try to have children. Because then there will be satisfaction for the wife and the husband and the parents. Just like yesterday at the farm, it was Vedasara's 5th birthday, Manigriva Prabhu's daughter. So they invited 20 children from her kindergarten. So I went afterwards to see Manigriva Prabhu, who was at that stage, they had all left, and he was lying on the couch. And I said, how was it? And he said, for my daughter, it was wonderful. For me, it was austerity. This is the nature of the material world. You have to have children, but there's a great deal of austerity involved also. Like that. So that should breed some detachment. Okay. In due course of time, that should make you more attached to Krishna. If you want to be attached to Krishna, just become married and have kids. That should be enough to make you attached to Krishna. After 20, 25 years of marriage and kids, then that should be it. If you haven't lost your taste for the material world, nothing will make you lose your taste. What's that? Yeah. Nature of the material world. Okay, any points? Therefore, O great sage, please save me from and my forefathers who are descending to the darkness of hell because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from hellish conditions. So what is Chitraketu Maharaj's entire anxiety? Without a son, we cannot perform pinda. Without performing pinda, the forefathers cannot be delivered. And if I die, if I do not have a son, I may not be delivered also. The Kshatriyas are a little fearful because the Kshatriyas, whoever's in their kingdom, they have to take 1/6 of the karma. Prabhupada has mentioned this, that the leader, the Kshatriya, he takes 1/6 of the karma of the citizens. So the Kshatriyas are always in anxiety because they may think that if the citizens are performing simple activity, in the next life, I may go to hell. So Kshatriyas always have that anxiety. So therefore, if the son comes, he can do the pinda or the ceremonies in order to deliver me from hell and also the forefathers, the previous kings. So this Vedic ritualism, it causes a great deal of anxiety. So for devotees, we don't have this same anxiety because we just think, I just do devotional service in this lifetime and at the end of my life, I will go to Krishna or I will go upwards and have another opportunity to perform devotional service. We don't have this anxiety about going to hell. Those who are too attached to Vedic rituals, they get too much in anxiety about so many things. And you see, that's one of the traps of Vedic culture or Indian culture. People get too much absorbed in the rituals. It's like if you go to India during marriage season, so much ritualistic activity and everyone just gets swept up in the whole thing. And it's very distracting to one's devotion or one's bhakti. You guys are really on time. You come for the best time drive session. The end. Thanks for coming. Okay. In response to the request of Maharaj Chitraketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful toward him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed a sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Twashta. So Maharaj Chitraketu, he is concerned about... Angira is concerned about Maharaj Chitraketu's spiritual advancement. So therefore, he gives his mercy to him. And how does he give him his mercy? In a way that he'll gradually become elevated or uplifted. So the devotee is always instructing others in such a way that they can gradually become elevated. And that's how we become expert as preachers. As devotees, we don't say the same thing to everyone. We don't say fully surrender to Krishna to everyone. Because not everyone can fully surrender to Krishna. So therefore we have to gradually help people to elevate themselves by giving them the right instruction to gradually lift them up. So Maharaj Chitraketu, because he's materially attached, Angira instructs him in such a way to gradually elevate him. How? Meaning what is being done or something? Yeah, we heard about Twashta previously. Whether or not it's that Twashta, I'm not sure. It doesn't mention if it's him. It could be him, but it might be another person. It says a demigod. That's what it says. So I don't know if it's him or if it's... Hey, YouTube. Hey, monkey. Hey, what is happening? I'm trying to get Bhagavatam class here. You're just playing like you two, like playing like in the forest. Punch minute, okay? Punch. O Parikshit Maharaj, best of the Bharatas, the remnants of the food offered in the Jagya were given by the great sage Angira to the first and most perfect among Chitraketu's millions of queens, whose name was Krita Duty. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. As Kritika Devi, after receiving the semen of Lord Shiva from Agni, conceived a child named Skanda Kartikeya, Kritajyoti, having received semen from Chitraketu, became pregnant after eating remnants of food from the Jagya performed by Angira. After receiving semen from Maharaj Chitraketu, the king of Shurasen, Queen Kritajuti, gradually developed in her pregnancy. O King Pariksit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. So, the great devotees, like Angira and his representatives, they break our attachment. They give you instructions in such a way that it will cut your attachment to the material world. So Angira is dealing with Chitraketu in such a way that his attachment will be broken. So he says, this child, it will give you great pleasure, but then it will give you great sorrow. Harsha, shoka. Like that. You'll be very happy, but then you'll be very sorrowful. So what does Chitraketu think? He thinks, okay, what he must be meaning is that I'm having a son, that will be very jubilant, great source of happiness. But then, he may not be so obedient, he may not be such a good son, so it will give me misery. He doesn't understand the full extent of the sage's words. But in the next part of the pastime, we'll hear about the full extent. That's a very powerful pastime. This is one of the pastimes that made me become a devotee. When I read the book Coming Back, and then this pastime is in there, and then it has so much power and effect. Any other points?
Angira Muni is showing, because such mercy is usually shown to devotees, that they should not become very attached. And so, what Chitraketu is, there is a mystery that he was a very good devotee, and that way, so Angira Muni is not allowing to get attached.
It seems he was a devotee. Yeah, he was a devotee. But how exalted a devotee he was, maybe in the beginning he wasn't so exalted, but he was a devotee.
Because this is a very strong person.
But usually when we're dealing with advanced devotees, they deal with us in such a way that they can judge how much mercy they can give us, or what we're able to tolerate or accept. So they may give us some very heavy instruction or something like that, but they understand how much they can give. Some people, they understand I cannot give so much instruction to because they cannot take it. But this person I can give more to, like that. So he could judge that Chitraketu was qualified. So then he gives a very powerful lesson. And Chitraketu becomes elevated because of that powerful lesson. So the guru can sometimes see these things. So any other points? Okay, so I'm feeling very tired. I'm going to take a month off. I'm feeling very physically and mentally exhausted. The last 3 years of my personal life outside this wonderful classroom has been very trying for me. My father passed away and other things, and it's taken a great toll on me, and I'm feeling extremely tired. So my plan is I may go to India for a month. I want to continue the classes, and my desire was that we could do it by Skype, so that you could all sit here in the classroom and you can see me and I can see you. But it may be that the place I'm going to in India may not have that facility. It may be that there may be audio facility. So that means that I will be able to hear you and you will be able to hear me, but we will not see each other. So I don't want the course to lose its momentum, because it means for the next 4 weeks or so I may need to rest. I will need to rest. I've come to a point where I'm going to collapse if I don't rest. So I'm going to rest, but I would like to continue the course during that time. I don't want it to be disturbed by, you know, these external circumstances. So I would like all of you, as a favour to me, to still come to the classroom. I know it won't be the same, because I won't physically be here. We won't see each other. But I would like you, as a favour to me, I would like you to still be loyal to the course and to come to the classroom. Please come. And Chaitanya Prabhu will somehow organise that we can hear each other. We're going to try to set up a system that we will be able to hear. You'll hear me speaking, and I will hear you asking questions, and I think that if it'll be more challenging, obviously. It won't be as good, obviously. But I think that if we go a little deep in our Krishna consciousness, then I think we can still get some benefit from the situation. So I'd like to continue that situation. So we're going to try that. I have to get a visa to go to India, which is probably going to take a week or something. So at this point in time, it looks like next Monday and Tuesday we'll just have class, as per usual. But after that, then it may be different for a month or so, like that. So I'm praying for your blessings, like that. Please give me your blessings. It's actually all of you, practically, who sustain my life as a devotee. I'm the material energy is unrelenting, like that, as you all know, because you're all going through your own unrelenting situations in the material energy does not stop. She always pounds you. So the last 3 years I've been heavily pounded, and I physically cannot keep going. I need to stop, otherwise I'm going to stop by force. If I don't be proactive, I'm just going to collapse, basically. So I'm going to do that for the next month or so, try to get my strength back, so then we can just continue. The course has been going for 9 years now, so I wanted to keep going like that. So if I have a break now and I rest a little bit, I think then we can continue, and hopefully we'll finish the 12th canto like that, if Krishna desires. Like that. That's our goal. Like that. So. Yeah, that wasn't, all of this was not planned. So we'll have to work. What I'll try to do, I've been thinking about today, is I'll try to write the exam, and then I think I'll leave it with Chaitanya Prabhu. And you can't read it. You can just hold it. And then I think we'll do the exam as normal. You'll all come, and then we'll organize something. I think we can still do it like that. I'll let you know next week. So next Monday we're planning on having the revision for chapter 6 to 13, 7 to 13. So we'll just go ahead as normal. But then there may be some adjustment for a small period of time. Like that. So please bear with the situation like that. So. Okay. And please give me your blessings, because it is by your blessings that anything auspicious will happen in my life. So.
Just thinking about this, after our chat earlier, a couple of comments. It might be worthwhile to find out how many actually interested to participate in audio feed programs. And the other comment is, I personally think that you should just have complete rest without having the anxiety on that side. Trying to get a link up of audio feed is going to be a weekly feature. Where is your rest going to be?
You're
in
1 o'clock night.
No, it's not. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. It's the opposite. Yeah, it's the other way. What I'm thinking is that I think it's okay. I don't think it'll strain me, because it's only 2 days out of 7 days. And, you know, it takes me a couple of hours to prepare the class usually. So I don't think it will be a strain at this point in time.
On this side, you don't know how many actually.
Okay, that's why I just made my special request that devotees do turn up. I agree, because it is going to be more challenging. It's not going to be the same. It won't have the same atmosphere. I agree. There's no question, but I think devotees should turn up. No, that's why I'm especially requesting that devotees do that. Because one of the traps in Krishna consciousness is that we think, oh, you know, this is boring, that is boring, so I won't do it. Like that. But then if we have that attitude, then, you know, things don't get done. So we just have to go a little deeper at this point in time. So let's at least try it, and then we'll see from there. Yeah, if it is actually not sustainable or something, then we'll make some adjustments. Because we have to see if it even works. I mean, if we're on the first night, if we're halfway through and then suddenly we lose contact or something, then we say, well, yeah, that's not going to work. You know, it's, you know, Maybe we'll just try. I think your comments are good, but I think let's just try it like that.
Perhaps we will try it in
the What's that?
Perhaps we can do a trial
in. Yeah, we will. We'll do something. We've got a week to work on it, so we'll try.
There's a solution. Fall back on it if nothing works.
Yeah.
You could just lecture onto a recorder and upload it. I know, I understand that we are doing a whole class discussion in itself, participating in kind of class, but a lecture wouldn't be too bad, is it? Just speak and so there'll be some compromise.
My only thing is that I don't think I'd find that very stimulating, just to sit in a room and just like speak for an hour. I don't know if I would get any kind of rupture out of that situation. I think that if I had people on the other end asking questions, then it would be more sustainable. I agree. If it doesn't work, if we can't get connection, then maybe I'll have to speak and then we'll upload it or something and then do something like that. But let's maybe keep that as a further option like this. So is everyone satisfied with that arrangement? Although it's not a satisfying arrangement, is it workable? Yeah. If everyone could please be committed to this, I think, because it will help me a lot, actually, if you all stay committed and turn up and actually come to the classroom. I know it will be austere, but please, it will give me a great deal of strength also. So please do that. So. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Yeah.